Hello, everyone. This is the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your weekly discussion of comics and other pop culture, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. I am Robbie Dorman.
And I'm Eric Z. Goodnight.
This is our first episode. It's very, very, very exciting. I can't even hold it all in.
Yeah, we know all about that, don't we?
Who's we? You have a mouse in your pocket?
You don't even know, like, so many mice. It's just, it's very tickly. Anyway, let's move on. We're not here to talk about my hang-ups.
You sure?
Well, I'm sure it'll come up.
Probably. But... All right. Since this is our first episode, I will delve into a little bit why we're doing this. I'm really the one who's the spearheader of this. Eric is just being dragged along into the party. There's very few podcasts out there, comic book podcasts specifically, that I find that I can enjoy thoroughly. Most are either way too serious or way too dedicated to either one publisher or, you know, there's a certain sweet spot, a Goldilocks zone, and I find that there weren't very many in it for me, so I thought I'd give my hand at it. And we'll see how it goes.
That's very moving.
Did you cry?
I mean, a lot. I was going to lie and say a little bit, but no.
It's okay.
Buckets. I'm dehydrated. I need some Gatorade now.
With electrolytes.
The electrolytes plants crave.
They do.
They do. They crave them so much.
So, we'll move on right into the gist of things. First of all, our first segment, checking in. Gives us a chance to talk about things we've experienced this week, either alone or together. Ooh la la.
Ooh.
And, we just, you know, either it could be anything. This is more of the pulp culture segment. So, Eric, anything you'd like to discuss in particular? Anything you've seen or played or read or touched?
I'm going to leave that last one alone. Good Lord, no. It's, we might want to just start with you because, I mean, like, what's out now? Iron Man, and there are a lot of movies out, and I'm missing everything.
Yes, I've seen Iron Man 3. I think once you see that, we can discuss. I think we can discuss that together.
We'll have to come back, and it's apparently more action movie-y.
Yeah, definitely. Have you seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
I have not.
First of all, you should see that. It's really good, but it's Shane Black who directed... Three, same guy directed that, and he also Downey Jr. is in that one as well. So it's they're very similar. It's like basically that movie, but with less Val Kilmer and a lot more metal suits.
Okay,
but
that's a good theme for Iron Man. They should really stick with that.
I don't want to delve too far in. If you're going to see it relatively soon, we can discuss.
I almost went and saw it last night, but I just. It was more important to come home and go to sleep.
That's understandable.
Just be a big baby and go to sleep.
Well, since we'll wait on that, I will say that I actually saw on Friday night, we went and saw From Up on Poppy Hill, which is the newest Studio Ghibli movie.
Good job saying Ghibli correctly.
I wasn't sure. That's how I have said it, so I was hoping it was right.
I
haven't been wrong for years, but Miyazaki wrote it. His son directed it, which we were unsure about. I wouldn't buy it. I don't even think Kim would buy it, and she's a much bigger Ghibli fan than I am. Even
who is this Kim person?
This is for the. Uneducated listener, Kim is my lovely girlfriend who puts up with my dribble.
It's a mutual friend of ours.
Yes, Eric knew her first.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But we went and saw it, and it was enjoyable. It's set in Japan in the '60s, post-war stuff.
I was getting a very sort of Grave of the Fireflies vibe just off of the poster art and all that.
Yeah, it's very it's kind of like in the post-war Japan, but with, like, they're like looking for it. It's right before the Olympics because I was in '64 in mm-hmm. Tokyo, and it kind of is a point of the movie where it's like, oh, this is where it's focusing on, like, how Japan's changing, and it's about these. Of course, the main characters are teenage girl, which Ghibli loves to do. But
girls.
The characters are good. Like they're all unique, and they all have good. There's good humor in it. Of course, it's very like. My main problem with a lot of Ghibli films is that there's not much, like, conflict in half of them.
Hmm.
Like, in My Neighbor Totoro, like, the only thing that happens is the little girl gets lost, or in Kiki's Delivery Service, like, she faces minor hardships.
Well, they're more character-driven stories. Yeah, exactly. That's the argument that you could make. And I think that is always a strength there, you know, that I mean, especially you bring up the women characters, they're always very strong and very dynamic women characters, which is one of the things I really admire about Miyazaki. It's not just all conflict and action.
Yeah.
I think there's room for all of those things, but I don't know. I don't know if I can even describe why I like Miyazaki so much. But I don't know. He's my secret dad. I'm a big fan.
Well, apparently he's an awful father because I read an article apparently about him and his son where they still have some tension because... And, like, this film actually deals a lot with an absent father figure. And, wow. Like, and he says that's kind of a focus on it. But the plot is... Like, there is a plot. It just doesn't show up until, like, 45 minutes into the film. And it's weird. I don't know if I should spoil it or not because it is kind of like a thing you find out not until later in the film.
Yeah, I think it's probably not a good idea to...
Yeah, I won't spoil it.
I mean, you don't spoil it for me and anyone yeah, that's listening
came out,
to this.
It just came out this week, so... It's odd. I'll just say that. It's very weird, and it... after that point, it made the movie a little awkward. Because it's just... It's strange. I mean, I would give it, like, a 6 just because of the humor and... Of course, the animation is beautiful as always.
6 of 10.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty harsh.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. You know, I didn't regret seeing it, but I'm not gonna buy it again, and we're probably not gonna see it.
Wow.
I mean, there's no supernatural elements at all. None. Which that's usually like a really big draw for me in the otherwise, you know, the character. Movies, like you were saying, I enjoy, you know, My Neighbor Totoro because there's Totoros in it and like the little forest creatures and all that stuff. But same as Kiki's, it's, you know, the magic and the cats and the stuff. That's what kind of draws me into those movies. But there's no presence of anything supernatural in this film. So it was just eh.
So it's Grave of the Fireflies, but 20 years later and without all the drama of being during World War II.
Yeah, I mean, it's very minor drama. I never felt like, I never...
So, do you think the movie would be improved with some firebombing?
Probably, yeah. I would think it would be.
it's lacking lots of dead children, is what you're saying.
I'm not saying it's only lacking that, but it might help.
Okay. It could help, yeah. Jesus Christ. Saddest movie ever. Good God.
I don't know about saddest ever. It's pretty sad, but
I have seen very few that were sadder than Grave.
How about Requiem
Flies.
For a Dream?
No, we're close.
Irreversible? Have you seen Irreversible?
I have not seen
that. It's on Netflix Instant right now, actually, and it's very much like Requiem for a Dream, where you're like, yeah, it's a great movie, but you never want to watch it ever more than once.
I've watched Requiem for a Dream many times.
You are a strange person.
I liked it. I don't know.
I enjoyed it too, but also I don't really need to feel like I watch junkies descend into madness.
I don't know. Maybe I didn't connect like on an emotional level with them. I just sort of appreciated the artfulness of the movie, and I guess in contrast to that, I feel like I did really connect emotionally with like Grave of the Fireflies.
Okay.
Maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know.
Grave of the Fireflies. Yeah, well, I think that it's more relatable because they're just innocent people for the most part.
I guess so.
So I guess
here's a question that'll get you in the feels.
Ooh.
Do you cry at the end of The Iron Giant?
No.
Oh man.
I can't remember a time where I've cried at the end of a film. It just doesn't do it. That does not make me cry.
Yeah, it does me, though. I cry at the end of everything, even meals.
Well, you didn't ask me about meals.
Oh, cheeseburger.
I mean, the right cheeseburger can make me shed a single tear.
Yes.
Just one, though.
Just like a Sun Bear tear. Anyway.
Okay. Well, we're moving on. You think we're done with that?
I think we've thoroughly embarrassed ourselves, yeah.
Not yet. It has just begun.
Okay.
Next, we can move on to our news brief. I feel like we should have little jingles. Maybe we can add them in. Little guitar riff or something.
Sounds good. That was amazing. Where did you get that cat?
Well, I do have several at hand, so.
Yeah, I guess so. Punched it in the throat, and it made that noise.
I can sing it like, news brief, yeah!
Oh, what do you got for me?
Actually, it's been a very light week on comic book news. Usually DC does something stupid every week, and you can rely on them to create some kind of stupid controversy that you can talk about, but this week they're really quiet. The only thing I could say was that's comic book related. Really, Joe Quesada released his new design of Angela. That's coming in the last Age of Ultron. For some reason they thought that was a good idea to bring her into the Marvel universe. But
well, I mean, why not? Is this readily available on the old internets?
Yeah, it's quite. It's the front page of CBR right now. So, but that's like he released that. It looks like Joe Quesada drew Angela from Spawn. It's not amazing, but I guess it'll serve its purpose. A lot of people are saying that. I have to agree with them. Most of them, this has been like made into a big thing that like she's crossing over. I just don't see. I mean, she wasn't even a good character in Spawn. I don't understand who.
Well,
is,
you have to understand. She's got a sword and no underwear.
I think that's only wearing metal underwear. I think that is her new.
Well, I think
her new
that,
design is basically just metal underwear.
That's
she has the old Thor style like winged helmet thing,
mm-hmm.
which actually doesn't even cover the top of her head, so not very useful.
Well, she's got ribbons that that want to hug her. I don't know.
She does have ribbons. They serve some type of purpose in combat, right? Ribbons.
Oh God!
Are you looking at it?
No. I actually kind of like the drawing.
Okay,
it doesn't. It doesn't upset me. There's nothing terrible about it. It's a little sort of a little blah. I'm not gonna say it's bad nor good. I think you described it pretty well. It's this guy doing fan art.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the people are still calling him out that this is all a big fake out, that this is just really
it's a really delayed April Fool's joke.
No, because Neil Gaiman, basically gave them permission to use her because he has co-rights to her with Todd McFarlane,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people are thinking this is a ruse that they're going to announce the return of Miracle Man, which Neil Gaiman will write for them.
Okay.
Which, because they got the rights back in, 2009, and Neil Gaiman was a big part of them getting the rights back, because he did, basically, 1604 just to do that, to get them the rights back. He made all that money. All the money he made for that basically went into them buying the rights for Miracle Man in 2009, I believe it was, and there's been a lot. I mean, they've had continual year-round waits for someone to announce that Miracle Man's coming back, and it hasn't. And now that Neil Gaiman finally has shown up in the Marvel Universe, they think that, they're going to use, that's Miracle Man's going to come back, which, it's Neil, if Neil Gaiman's writing it, it probably will be good. If not, it'll probably be terrible, but, oh well.
There we have it.
But anything other than that, I mean, there was a lot of Iron Man news, which I don't know if you were interested in discussing.
I mean, I don't want to discuss comic books. This is
well, not Iron Man the comic, Iron Man the movie, and the in the Marvel movie franchise. About Robert Downey Jr.'s contract is technically up after this and the Avengers 2. They are saying that he won't return, and mainly because Marvel doesn't want to pay him. When he did the first Iron Man, he put into his contract that he gets a percentage of any movie that he's in, that Iron Man is present in, and no one was expecting it. Avengers was pretty much the
most commercially successful movies that they've done so far, weren't they?
Yeah, and Avengers made $1.25 billion, and he apparently
you carry that number around with you, just in your pocket.
It's in my head, actually, in a pocket.
You have pockets in your head. That's many. Good.
I'm like freaking Cable, Deadpool. I'm like,
you're like the entire '90s.
I'm Rob Liefeld. Rob Liefeld is in my head, continually drawing new characters with pockets and.
But not feet.
No, they just float ethereally.
They float. Their hands are obscured. Yeah, they're obscured by fog and smoke.
But other than that, yeah, and there's been a lot of debates about bringing back certain characters because they're not getting paid very much. Like Scarlett Johansson is getting for a movie that made almost $1.5 billion. She's not making a lot of money for two or the Captain America sequel, which she'll also be in. So that's been the only other big news, comic associated news, and for the week. It's been a kind of a light week, but yeah. I guess moving on. So, weekly floppies.
Yeah, I was gonna say, how are you gonna tackle saying the word floppy?
I love the word floppy. It's a good word.
There's
no more floppy disks. So
that's true. So we there's have a just ch- a chance. There's just save icon now.
Exactly. So a chance to bring it into the lexicography of our podcast.
So you're barely even old enough to know what a floppy disk is, aren't you?
I used it in like third grade.
Okay.
We played Oregon Trail. We had floppy disks.
God, I think Oregon Trail for like a third grader, it's more impossible than playing Dwarf Fortress.
We just killed lots of buffalo.
Yeah.
We just went, like, oh, who cares if like, we die of syphilis? Let's just kill 70 buffalo.
Yeah, that's pretty much the way I played it, too. It's like, I don't need... Let's get no water. Let's get no food. Let's buy 900,000 bullets. Okay, let's go hunting now.
We can only carry 300 pounds of meat. Let's shoot 10 tons of buffalo.
That's how you do it.
I think it's the same... attitude that the early settlers had because they killed them all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, to be fair, those buffalo tongues were really tasty.
I've never had buffalo tongues, so I can't really speak to that.
I actually don't. They did that. What? Okay. This is. I think we're losing focus here.
No. I think
bring it back. Bring it back. Where did this go?
We'll just change it to Handsome Boys Buffalo Hour. Discuss different this week.
I feel really strongly about this. That there just aren't enough podcasts about buffaloes.
I think buffaloes are excellent.
The American bison.
Yes. Okay. I
just feel really. I feel really, really good about this new direction.
Oh, I'm about to break your heart then.
Okay. Shit. Are we about to talk about comics?
We are. We're going to talk about comic books. So let's start off. I try to be a little democratic with our selection of books to review, so we're starting off with we're doing a couple DC, a couple Marvel, and an indie book as well, trying to mix them up between all the available weekly releases. So starting off, we're doing Batman number 20, the second part of a Clayface arc right before Snyder goes into his 12-issue Year Zero, promises to be an epic, but he has to end up this story first, and I know you had some opinions about this, Eric, so I'll let you begin, if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, I'm really coming into this. I have not followed any of this reboot. I don't know anything about what the hell's going on. Well, but it feels like a lot. Did you want to jump in there?
No, I was going to say, but I mean, if you're an average comic book fan,
that's I'm coming in here just like average Joe, but it still feels like something that I have read or seen over and over and over again. It's a rehash, you know.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy it too much either. I had heard there was a lot of, because Batman, the DC, I don't know if you've heard about this, but they did the WTF covers. Did you hear anything about that last month?
No.
It's like they did Gatefold covers, you know, basically there's like a piece of, it's, you open it up, the cover, it's like a little decorative thing, and there's like a surprise inside, like, oh my god, shocking. Because like the issue of 19, the cover of it, had Bruce Wayne pointing a gun at Commissioner Gordon. And like, and everyone's like, whoa, why is Batman pointing a gun at, I mean, why is Bruce Wayne using a gun? That's awful. But and then it turns out he's Clayface, which you kind of get the ramifications in 20, which is, I mean, you assume that, you know, Clayface has been taking the form of Batman, you know, Bruce Wayne, not knowing he's Batman and trying to sully his good name. And you kind of jump into 20 where it, you know, Batman, of course, foils him. I was not too, I mean, it just, you know.
Yeah, it's
not that good to me.
It's, well, I mean, it doesn't even feel like a Batman story for adults to me. It feels like it's,
yeah,
I don't know. It just lacks so much substance.
This Clayface story has been done many times.
Absolutely to death. It's just.
And the fact that, I mean, I haven't been following DC since the reboot very closely, you know, loosely, but, like, from what I've gathered, I've read a few of the Batman issues, like, they're doing a very, like, Iron Man type thing that, you know, where Bruce Wayne is his benefactor, and, you know, Tony Stark was Iron Man's benefactor, you know, and I don't like the idea of Bruce Wayne and Batman being connected in the public eye. I mean, I see where they're coming from, but I don't. And then Batman defends him. I mean, that doesn't seem like it'd deflect any inspection of that. Maybe Bruce Wayne is Batman. That seems like it'd welcome it. So
yeah, it does. I did not know that, but the whole thing felt very, very thin.
Yeah. Oh, let's move on. We thumbs down. No.
we don't want to.
Well, how did you enjoy the art in Batman?
Well, I actually do like this art. It also feels very young. Like I just turned to the page where they're in the garbage disposal.
Yeah, Star Wars. And there's the Star Wars garbage disposal.
The Star Wars garbage disposal. Then he puts on Darth Vader's suit.
Yes.
Or
the Batman, it's the Batman Beyond suit. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
But it's like that first panel of. Of handsome boy Bruce Wayne, and how it just feels almost a little bit like a shoujo comic. Are you familiar with shoujo?
I am not familiar with shoujo.
It's Japanese, like romance comics. All the men, they have, you know, effeminate features, and they're very non-threatening, and it's supposed to be, you know, for young adolescent girls to connect to. But that's Shonen Batman there, or not Shonen, Shoujo Batman there.
Okay.
Shonen is boys' comics.
But yeah, I mean, I enjoy the art as well. I mean, I like how Clayface looks. He's satisfactory, you know, threatening looking. But it's just the story just
underwhelms me. And it doesn't really quite do it for me either. But one of the things that I do like about the art, and this is probably something I'm going to talk about a lot, I don't really like comic art that is terribly, like, photorealistic.
Yeah.
And this is someone that has drawing ability, that might be using some references, but it's, you know, it's invented stuff, and I think it's invented pretty well. Yeah, I think they do a good job of it.
Greg Capullo has a pretty good reputation. He's been doing all of the new Batman series for the most part. I think he's missed a few issues just because of the sheer volume of it, but
it's nicely stylized, and I like that. And I think because of all the movies that no one seems to be, they really want to push photorealism.
Yeah, which it's kind of overrated. Especially.
I think so, but a lot of what we're going to talk about is very photorealistic.
Yeah. Okay, so, moving on. Next up, we have Constantine number 3, the last part of the initial arc for his solo book, the more all-ages friendly book, not rated T for teens, I should say, but it might as well be all-ages for superhero comics, it is. For DC comics, I mean, it's not like the Vertigo book.
Yeah.
But, you want me to start? You want to go ahead?
It doesn't much matter. I've got a lot of thoughts about this one.
You go ahead. I know you have more of a history reading Hellblazer than I do, so you should probably, you can start.
I actually don't.
Really?
He's a character I've been interested in a really long time. It's like a really interesting idea, and he's just like this, I don't know, because you call him like the hard-boiled detective. He's kind of the guy that gets the shit kicked out of him in that way.
Yeah.
I don't know how much, God, I really don't know enough about the character. We're both kind of in the dark here, but I mean, it doesn't seem like he really has that much magical ability, but he's investigating all of these happenings. I remember he was in one of the early Sandman stories. I don't know. He's a character that's always fascinated me, and I've never followed up on him. But that being said, I really enjoyed reading this book.
Yeah. I had actually gone back after we had decided to do this one. I had read one. I went back and read 1 and 2.
Okay.
And this is way better than 1 and 2. Mm. This is, like, leagues better. Like,
really?
Yes. Like, literally. Really. The art is, I think, noticeably better to me. I mean, although I believe it's the same artist, but it's not, it's much better, to my eye. They're all Renato. Yeah, it's the same artist in all three issues, but it's... just the very beginning of it where he goes into London and he's already looks like off. He looks terrible because he's been cursed, which you don't know why. But
I think that's a really great device. I think. Are you familiar with Ben Bova, the science fiction writer?
I am not.
Well, he's supposed to be very good. I've read very little, but he calls this setting the time bomb.
Yeah.
So it's very clear there's something threatening, and it's always in the back of your mind throughout the whole story, and it really ups the anxiety. It's I don't know, it's a great device.
Yeah,
it really drew me in immediately.
Yeah, that really created an urgency that was not present in the other issues, and just the setting. I think being in London made it much. I mean, the one issue was like in. Sweden, or it was in a Nordic country, so it was like a lot of ice. And then the other one was, I think, was it Brazil or a South American, Central American country. And I don't, maybe it's just the setting. And the first time that he goes in, like, there's no, he fights these other magicians. You know, he's fighting these two magicians, three magicians really technically, but I think and they're trying to get this put together this magic. A compass that would give them immense power, and he's trying to defuse it. And he goes into this alternate reality, which looks amazing. And I love the art in this book. It might just because it's so like there's the occult influence with all the demon and the magicians and stuff makes it brighter. But it's really gritty and grimy. And it kind of delivers that feeling that the other issues are not done. And after, like, if I had picked up those two books and then not picked up this third one, I probably would have, you know.
One and two would not lead you to three, but three led you to one and two.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's, there was, three, this is, like, much, much better than one and two.
Can I burst your bubble on this real quick?
Sure, burst my bubble.
You
do it all the time.
I know. This is such a thing to run out there and say. It's kind of a dick thing, but I swear to God, some of this stuff feels traced to me.
Well, it's possible. I mean,
the thing is, like, the first page, these images are clearly done from photographs, the images of the people. Whether they're traced or not, I mean, I'm not going to make that accusation, but I feel pretty strongly that the characters in the book, which I like the way they look, but a lot of this had to have been posed with three-dimensional figure modeling software. I mean, whether they were... they might have been modeled by the artist. They might have been stock models. Like, there's a lot of them freely available on the internet, but a lot of them, they look very sort of stiff and artificial. And it looks like he posed the panels, he composed the panels in this program and either printed them out or drew them, like, based on screen caps in Photoshop.
Okay. Well, I don't see it.
It's sticking out to me.
Well, you have the background, so.
Yeah. I might be wrong, but there's some things about the figures that are, like, a little bit too consistent and feel a little just too artificial to me.
Okay.
I do think that there are times that he's, he's taking things and making them his own. But a lot of it just feels, I don't know, it feels like he's relying on it a little bit too much.
Okay.
It seems like a good idea for reference, but it feels artificial.
I might do some research on his artist and see what he's done.
Yeah, I think I want to follow up on him too, because, I mean, I genuinely do like the art. I think it's a good process, but I feel like he's relying on it a little too much. But I mean, when you're doing this stuff for a living and you've got to crank it out so quickly, you gotta find your illustrator shortcut somewhere.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like, I don't, and again, even like this point in a broader topic where, like, if Greg Land, for example,
the infamous,
like, if no one had ever pointed that out to me, I'm not sure if I would ever notice. And now that I notice, I can't not see it. Like, I want to read the new Iron Man. The writer for the new Iron Man book is Kieran Gillen, who I enjoy. I really want to read it, but now all I see is the porn star faces and Tony Stark looking, you know, have the same facial expression in every single panel. And I can't not see it, which bothers me. Because I don't think I would have noticed if no one had ever shown, like, pointed out that he traced stuff.
I think it's I don't know, it's just the kind of thing that illustrators do. I don't know. I don't have quite as negative opinion about it as most comic book fans seem to.
Well, I think they feel like it's cheating or something.
And I see that. I mean, when I was in when I was in art school, like, people would get angry at other artists because they were tracing their own drawings. You know, they're like, why are you tracing? What's wrong with you? Stop tracing. I drew it.
You know,
why don't you shut the hell up?
All right. So, overall, good book. I suggest,
absolutely. I feel pretty good about it.
It's a lot of fun. I think this finally kind of captured what they're looking for, the new Constantine. You know, the less moody, less adult, you know, less Vertigo Constantine, the more like fun DC book Constantine.
Yeah, I think I would read more. I could get into it.
Okay, so let's moving on. We're doing Bravest Warriors number 8, the Boom All Ages book.
Oof.
there wasn't a lot out there in the indie releases this week, you know. And I know that you are vaguely following this book, so I thought, you know, I mean, I'm the one, you know, that's walking into the unknown here, so.
This arc seems to be, you know, it's its own self-contained story.
Yeah, I mean, I understood what was happening. I didn't really enjoy it that much. It didn't seem to have that much humor. Yeah. But that's really what I'm looking for, like fun humors kind of thing. And this is, you know, just didn't have it for me. There was a few like things that I felt like were good character moments in there, like the one character, you know, saying, you know, they want to give him his feelings back, and he's like, I like not being sad anymore. And that was like, well, that was kind of a gut punch. But other than that, there was really nothing that noteworthy in this issue. It seemed very forced kind of adventure-y stuff.
Yeah. I don't particularly. One of the things, like, I really enjoy the Adventure Time comics.
Yeah, they're really good.
But the reason I think that they work is because they're told so clearly in the Adventure Time voice. You know, Adventure Time, I mean, it was just right out of the door, it was its own thing. You know, it was very, I don't know, it's so hard to explain. I guess I keep coming back to voice. It was just so clear. It was saying something unique, and the comics capture that really well, where this feels like it's trying to be Adventure Time in space, except with this like goofy Sentai group of characters.
Yeah.
And it's like it doesn't quite know what it is yet.
Yeah, I also enjoyed the cat bug. I enjoy the cat ladybug creation.
Well, you. If it's got cat anything.
Not cat anything, but cat no. Most things probably. But you know, it was I enjoyed the little cute cat bug. But even when it ripped its own face off. But
you were like, "Aw.
Yeah, that's so cute. It's a robot." But yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah.
The backup story actually I found much more interesting than
I completely agree. It just had a much better feel to it.
I mean, it's just these characters kind of hanging out and having fun. And and it was fun, but the main story, not so much. Yeah, nothing else to say?
I really... Did you... you got the digital edition,
yes.
Too? Yeah, I liked the... That is one thing that I'd throw out there, is I really like the cover gallery.
Yeah, that's very nice.
Yeah. This is the first digital comic that I've ever bought.
Wow. Welcome.
That's it. Yes.
For the listeners, I buy everything. All new weekly comics digitally. So that's.
It seems like it seems like the thing to do. But
I mean, you're not really buying the paper. You're buying the content. So.
No, and these comics, like every other one that we're talking about, I bought the actual print editions. And by trade, I'm a printer, so the printing technology has gone a long way to making comics look better, but I think they're really just cheaping out. Like, they just feel so gross and cheap. It's just on the thinnest weight paper, and it I don't know. They're really cheaping it out. I guess that they have to do it to cut back on costs or whatever, but I don't know. It makes me not want to buy them. I guess they just want everyone to go digital anyway.
Well, I you know, make it easier on the publishers. They take out something else that they have to do. But I know that the market's not there yet. I know that there is. I mean, they say it's probably up to 10 to 15% of readers are buying digitally. So I mean, it's a noticeable percentage. I mean, they do get quite a hefty chunk of their market from it. So, and it's only growing as more people get, you know, tablets and are familiar with e-readers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But
Well, anyway, I wanted to bring up these covers because I think they're actually my favorite part of this book. That's just one of the things I love about Pendleton Ward's stuff is how illustrators have embraced it. Like, you have all these people that are, like, internet famous illustrators, like, really getting on board. They find just great talent to do this stuff. Bravest Warriors and Adventure Time. I don't know. I couldn't be more in love with
it.
Yeah,
variant covers are, I mean, they are everywhere now, it seems. It mm-hmm. seems like mm-hmm. that it's really grown back. I mean, that used to be the big thing back in the 90s before, in the big boom before everything crashed. And
I'm waiting for the foil covers to come back.
They did one for Age of Ultron number one. So, other than that, yeah. I mean, it's a big market because, you know, they're limited edition. People seek them out. But, I mean, I just like the art. So, Bravest Warriors, thumbs down. We're not fans.
I could not agree more.
So, moving on, we go on to Marvel. Starting off with Uncanny Avengers number 8 by Rick Remender and Daniel Acuna. This is knee deep in the second arc. Rick Remender basically continuing off from where he kind of left off with Uncanny X-Force. He kind of is deep into the apocalypse mythology that he's kind of building.
I like where it's going. And I just am coming out of nowhere on this. Have hardly a clue what's going on, but
yeah, you know, it's
coming into the middle here. I feel lost, but I'm really liking it. I really like this book.
Yeah, it's a lot of people just the art itself with the sunspot destroying the falling the space station, and it mm-hmm. really Thor looks great. And I'm enjoying his art, and there's lots of, and then Cap fighting the terrorists. That's mm-hmm. a lot of fun.
It's a beautiful book, and I like a lot of things about it. I would continue reading this as well.
Yeah, this is one of my if we weren't doing this, I would still be reading this book because I love Rick Remender. And I loved all the stuff he did with the apocalypse mythology in Uncanny X-Force, and this is basically continuing on with all of that.
Which of the X-Force books did he write?
All of them. He wrote the Uncanny X-Force, the whole series.
The one that you
suggested, yes, all those. Okay. He wrote that whole series, so.
Okay, well, it really did feel connected to that, so I'm getting that. Yeah. But the thing about those is that, and maybe it was just, I mean, of course it's Avengers and X-Men in this one, so it's still a huge ensemble cast, but this just feels a lot tidier, if you know what I mean. Like, a lot of the X-Force just felt too messy. I don't know what it was. I mean, a lot of it was excellent. And overall, I really enjoyed the X-Force, but this feels like a more concise statement.
Tightly plotted. Well, I think he. It's been a lot of the time. I think this was kind of been this plot. I know that from he did it at an AMA not too long ago on Reddit, and he was going to be doing this a similar plot, you know, with basically in the X-Force book, but then they basically came to him and said, hey, we want you to write an Avengers book. The only catch is you have to drop, you know, writing X-Force, you know, after you can, you know, and you end it, and then you move on to Avengers. And, you know, he couldn't turn down because he gets to write Captain America. He writes the Captain America solo book as well, which is also very, very good. But I think the fact that this is it's a larger team, probably double the size of the X-Force team. I think that fact makes him, I think maybe even like keep even closer eye on mm-hmm. the pacing and that. So that may explain. But Yeah, the Apocalypse Twins, them killing a Celestial, and with the subplot of, you know, Thor discovering all the dirty little secrets that Wolverine is keeping when, you know, he was running running the X-Force team, and, like, you know, combination of all those things working together, it's quite excellent. I Remender's often said that he's been he's tasked with, like, taking all these 90s X-Men villains that are weird and have very odd backstories and, you know, tidying them up and making them presentable. And considering I grew up on X-Men cartoon of the 90s, where a lot of that was featured, the fact that he's doing so much with Apocalypse makes me very happy.
Yeah, these are, they're excellent villains. I love the designs, too.
Yeah, the whole, you know, because they're the children of Archangel and one of the horsemen. Yeah, they look really good. And the fact that one of them, the female, lost her vision, her vision was taken away, and now she, like, sees through sound and tastes, you know, she has synesthesia. Time,
I was going to say the word synesthesia.
Time, space, synesthesia. That is, that's such bananas. A sci-fi thing that's amazing.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yes. It's great. The fact that she can't see, but instead she experiences...
I thought you were going to say it's great that I can smell bananas.
It is. Well, that's good, too. It's not a bad thing that you can smell bananas.
It's probably an indifferent thing. Maybe.
I think it's a good thing. I think anyone who... Spelling isn't really focused on enough anymore. I think it's a good thing that you can spell things.
I guess so. Reading is fundamental.
So we're all go on Uncanny Avengers 8. I cannot be higher on this book. Maybe a little bit. Maybe the next book I'm higher on, just because it's probably the best thing going in the Marvel now.
I don't.
But
I actually like, I like Avengers more. I don't.
Really?
Dislike. Yeah, I don't dislike Thor, God of Thunder.
Okay.
But,
so, and that's not too much of a segue there, but the last book this week we're doing is Thor, God of Thunder, number 8. In the... spoiler alert. In the God Bomb arc, the second arc of Jason Aaron's run on the new Marvel Now book. And I love this book. I love this issue. I love everything about... He's doing everything perfect in my mind. The art, Esad Ribic, his style doesn't work sometimes with certain books. Putting him in on this Thor book is the best thing they could have done, because it fits it perfectly. And I love the time traveling Thors and young impulsive Thor meeting his future granddaughters.
It's so... I think it's a very fun idea, but it's just... It's just almost too absurd for
really?
Me.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't dislike... I mean, I guess... I don't know. We talk about this a lot. I really love crazy comics, but, like, he hits him with a shark right here.
I know, that's amazing!
It's
he has a space shark as a weapon. Melee weapon. You don't like that? Mm.
I should probably like it more than
I just
do.
Like, as I was reading this, I'm like, Eric must love that.
You would think so. I don't know what about this is turning me off, but I mean, it's not that I dislike the book. It's like, you know, you might give it a 10 out of 10. I'd probably give it an 8 out of 10.
That's still a good rating. And you're
yeah, I do really like it, and I want to read the whole
this
arc.
This is all low-hanging fruit for me. I love kind of epic feel mixed with some time like very sci-fi concepts mixed in with a book that's not very sci-fi. Thor is not a sci-fi book, even though he's, you know, has gone to space many, many times.
I've often thought that there needed to be more Vikings sailing through space.
Exactly. Wielding space sharks as a melee weapon.
Yes.
What just happened? You were struck in the face with a shark. I love it. It's beautiful.
And then
you get the last splash page of them, you know, wielding their hammers.
Well, what hammers?
Now we let the hammers talk.
I just like the dear Lord, and like the veins popping out of their arms, the multiple Thor, and then you got old man Thor with his destroyer arm, which is also spectacular. So I mean, I've loved every issue of this ever since I started reading the new books, and this is of all the Marvel Now series, this is my favorite.
Let me bring up something that sticks out to me going back to the art, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it. One of the things that I always enjoy about good storytelling art is facial expressions.
Yeah.
And this artist, you said Asad Ribic is his name?
That's my best. From what I've heard, that's how you pronounce it. But yeah, I believe that's...
I'll have to look into him. I mean, I think he's... It could be a woman, for all I know.
It's a dude. I'm fairly confident in that. If I'm wrong, I'm sure all the people listening will... All of them will correct me.
Yeah. I'm very drawn to good facial expressions, but a lot of them feel pretty corny. They feel a little exaggerated. It makes me think of a blog post that John Crisfalusi, the artist behind Ren and Stimpy, he wrote about character acting in animation. Yeah. And this feels like a lot of overacting. I mean, I think there's still very good expressions that's very expressive and tells the story well, but it feels forced in some places. But it's not horrible. It just feels overdone. It doesn't have the light touch that the quality of the artwork feels like it should have.
Okay. I understand, you know, subtlety in facial expression sometimes is I think in this book it's so outlandish that, you know, having people grimace insanely and shout and having crazy faces kind of...
Well, I mean, what about this panel where Thor is about to pick up Mjolnir and he's making duck face?
Or is it that near the end?
Yeah, it's close to the end.
I'm getting there.
Tell me how duck facey he looks here.
I think that's... That doesn't look duck facey to me. That's the young impulsive Thor going, maybe I could get... Maybe that's... That hammer looks pretty... He likes weapons. He likes killing. He's not... You know... Then you got modern Thor, who's more studied, and old Thor is like grizzled, who are both more, you know, veterans. And young Thor is much... He hasn't had experience Mjolnir yet, and he sees this handsome hammer just sitting there waiting for him. And I think he's a little mischievous in there in that face, thinking
naturally he makes duck
I think that's like a that to me that's more of like a kind of a sly thoughtful face, like he's trying to like maybe I can grab that. I didn't really think about it. It didn't look like duck face to me, but you know, there's a thing in wrestling. I'm gonna bring up wrestling now, professional wrestling.
I'm so.
I know
happy
you're
that
wait.
We're
I, you are waiting for this moment. This. It's gonna happen in this podcast eventually, where I'm gonna have to discuss wrestling and bring it in. Because comic books and wrestling are actually very. The art is very like they have very eerie similarities, but. They like,
for one thing, there's lots of blonde.
There are lots of blonde men, but it kind of with certain comic books this parallel doesn't work, but with this one I think it does. Where if you go to like you know a lot of old timer wrestlers, guys who you know are basically semi retired, but since they drank away or snorted away all their money where they're actually stars, they still have to wrestle, but of course they are wrestling really small venues. And like an example would be like Tatanka, you know, all those all those characters from the 80s, the gimmicks, really bad, you know, gimmicks that were, like, basically all racial-based or all, like, occupation-based, or are basic really bad rip-offs of, like, pop culture. But, like, Tatanka is a good example. Like, I was reading someone's experience from a live event on Reddit, and they said, oh, well, you know, you go there, and there's only, like, 50 people in the audience at most. It's, like, in an old gym or in an armory or something. And, like, most of these guys are wrestlers are no one's ever heard of. They're all indie guys just trying to get their name out there. But Tatanka is, like, everyone knows him because they all watched him when they were kids. And he comes out, and, like, everything does is big. Like, every gesture is huge. Like, every facial expression is, like, is completely overblown and ridiculous. And, I mean, you see that in wrestling a lot, but, I mean, it basically came about that he was doing this because he's trying to communicate this to, you know, back when he was famous, when he was on TV all the time, he was in crowds of 40 or 50,000 people. And he was trying to communicate these feelings to this gigantic audience. And I think there are parallels in this book is because it has this epic, big feeling to me. And one of the things that draw me to this book is, like, because it's happening, you know, I have three different versions of the same character from vastly different times trying to stop a guy who's trying to murder all the gods in the world. And I feel like it's like him trying to strain at the constraint, the constrictions of the medium. I don't know if I'm explaining this very well, but it's like...
I kind of understand around what
okay.
you're saying.
As long as you vaguely understand what I mean, then
yes,
you can understand.
As long as it's vague, then I think we've done our duty. can we make it more vague?
I think so. You want me to talk more about wrestling?
Yes, but
maybe next week.
Yeah.
Okay. I that wraps up. I think we're both good to go. Me especially on Thor number 8. Go if you're not already reading this book, go buy it. Dear Lord, it's great. Jason Aaron, Issa Rubik, every issue, amazing. Go buy it.
And if you want to listen to my opinion, just still go buy it, but walk a little slower.
I think that's a good comparison. Yeah. Just instead of buying it on Wednesday, buy it on like Saturday. Just, you know.
Yeah.
And amble to the comic book store.
Yes.
And casually pick it up, go, this week, sure. This week.
Power walk to get Thor.
Power walk to Thor. So you're more than an amble, you're up to power walk.
You know, you gotta get a little bit of cardio in somehow.
That's very true. How about some DDP yoga?
Some DDP yoga.
Bringing it back. Bringing it back to wrestling.
Bringing it back.
You should try it out, man. You're going to like it.
I know.
All you listeners, this is my... I'm also advising, suggesting DDP yoga. I've been more using it. It's pretty good. I like it.
Diamond Dallas
DDP,
Page.
DDP. Self-high five.
Oh, yeah. He's doing his sun salutations.
He is. It's funny. It's awesome the way he's so into it. He does the whole, like, cross-legged...
Hey, man.
Cross-legged...
Good for him. Yeah,
it's great.
The lotus position.
Lotus position, and like at the very end of the workout, like you put yourself in like the lotus position, and then you do the DDP diamond, and with your hands, and then you do it with your hands, and then you breathe out, push it out, and then bang. You're supposed to bang on the carpet or the floor or whatever when you're done. Like it's a big rah. You finish this workout.
That is absolutely.
We are getting off topic. We should. That is it for our weekly single reviews of we're moving on to our next segment, which is called Classic Breakdown.
That was beautiful.
Classic Breakdown for those who cannot interpret my terrible singing. This is where we break down something older, usually longer, something maybe an arc or even a full complete story book. You know, this week, for example, we're doing Scott Pilgrim. It's not that old, still pretty new, but I can't deny its impact on culture and comic book culture specifically. But, you know, from week to week, it may vary. We could, you know, do something from the 30s or the 70s or, you know, 5 years ago.
but it's generally long form stuff that we can get more broader views on, not just, you know, break down a single panel or whatever. But this week, it is Scott Pilgrim. The entire series, not just any individual books.
We decided to review Scott Pilgrim number 3 and only,
Scott Pilgrim 3. So if you were looking for 2, go find another podcast. That's right.
Cram it up your ass.
Yes, we're openly antagonistic to all the viewers we don't have yet. Listeners, excuse me. We're on a television show.
No, it's okay. You can look at a podcast.
That's true. It's not very exciting. I mean,
it doesn't really work so well.
It's a visual medium.
Yeah, it's not the most visual medium. Okay. Not the most.
So, Eric, how about you begin with Scott Pilgrim? Give me your vague thoughts, and then we'll go from there. Start with your big thoughts on Scott Pilgrim as a whole.
God, where do I even begin? I just personally am a big fan of Japanese style, manga style comics. I really like black and white comics. I even like Osamu Tezuka, who's one of Brian Lee O'Malley's big influences. I'm a big fan of Tezuka. I don't know. Scott Pilgrim was one of my favorite things that I was reading when it came out. I read every book a half dozen times at least, and I was absolutely on the edge of my seat when book 6 came out. I was really, really stuck.
For me, I was not in comic. I was not really following comics when Scott Pilgrim was big, when it was coming out. And I really only, it only, like, the product itself really only got my attention the first time when the movie came out, which, I mean, all my friends loved. Like, some of my friends who I don't really trust their opinions necessarily about movies.
The same ones that they have to go off and watch, what in the hell's that Bazinga shit called?
The Bazinga shit.
Yeah, we'll just call it Bazinga shit. We can leave it there.
I think everyone who likes and hates the show already knows what we're talking about. Yes. Big Bang Theory. I'll just say it. But
Big Bang Theory. Oh yes.
Neither of us are fans. Spoiler. But the same types of fans. People who really like, you know, my old school Nintendo games and are, you know, quote unquote nerds.
Mm.
But don't really, you know, I hate to be that person who says they're not nerds, they don't like, but, you know, I would just phrase it that I don't trust their, if they say, go see this movie, it's amazing, I'm going to read a couple reviews anyway, just to make sure. And they love Scott Pilgrim. I mean, they thought it was like the best movie of the year. And I watched it. I didn't even know it was based on a comics series, and I, because I'm an idiot, and I didn't enjoy it that much.
Well, I
thought it was okay.
Well, I think people enjoyed it. I mean, what it was speaking to was pretty real.
I don't know. It was just too much to me.
It's six. Six self-contained stories
condensed into an hour and a half.
It just felt grotesque to me. I couldn't buy it. I mean, it felt like it felt like a huge novel, but like you're condensing it to like an afternoon. It just feels stupid and forced.
That's my problem with a lot of things that are translated from either novel or comic book to a film. And I think that's where this is getting off topic, but I think where Avengers triumphed the most is that it managed to make all these characters unique and individual, but also put them together on the same screen in the same movie.
Well, I think
for 60 years, but
right. Well, I think it's relevant to bring it up, but I mean, Scott Pilgrim would have been like trying to do all the Avengers introductions in one movie.
That's what I mean. Like, they did each movie. They did Iron Man, and then they did the Hulk, and then they did Captain America. They did them all separately. And I think it's kind of
I don't know, it's foolhardy to try and condense all that material into an hour and a half of a film when there's a lot of, you know, good character stuff that isn't in the movie. There's lots of really just, you know, bits that work well on film, so they included them. But we are not talking about the movie. We're talking about the comic. Where I'm coming from, I saw the movie first. I didn't like it.
And I started reading the comic. I want to say that book 4 was already out when I started reading. I had heard of it when book 1 was out because I was reading Player versus Player, PvP, at the time. And all these people, like, what is his name? Kurtz got behind the book. Everyone, I don't know, it was pretty exciting at the time. Everyone was trying to promote Brian Lee O'Malley, and it's one of the reasons that led to his, you know, his success as this indie publisher. Or this, yeah. Not indie publisher, but indie comic. Oni Press is the publisher. That's,
But I finally, a few months ago, I read it for the first time. I read it all in one sitting. I read all 6 volumes in one sitting. Like, took me about 3 hours, but it was compelling enough to make me read it all at once. I did not break it down into, you know, different sittings. I enjoy it much more. It makes me wish I had not seen the movie first.
Yeah, it's definitely the superior way. I don't know. I have a lot of friends, people whose opinions I actually do trust, that really enjoyed the movie. And I think that on a purely nerd culture level, I do enjoy the movie. Like, if you watch the outtakes for, there was some track where they were just, like, riffing and doing different lines, and what's the guy's name? He plays Todd Ingram. That's the character's name, but he was Superman. Do you know the actor's name?
Oh, yeah, Ryan, Brandon Rouse.
Brandon. Well, he's just throwing out all these weird lines, and one of the lines that he does is, he's like, "Feel the storm? It's coming." And I doubt that means... Does that mean anything to you? No?
No, it doesn't.
Well, it's from Viz Video. They had this commercial for the Fatal Fury movie, and it was on everything they did. And me and a lot of my best friends, like, we got so into anime during this time, and we've all seen that commercial 100 million times. And we actually used to throw that around, like, "You feel the storm? It's coming." We'd just say that to each other. And then this guy says this thing that's been our in-joke for years and years. And I don't know, there was a lot of that feeling in this movie, and I think that's kind of why people enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just on a pure... like nerd culture,
self-referential
level. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's a little masturbatory, I guess. It's like, yeah, it made the Zelda sound. Oh my goodness!
I know, that's, and again, it's, yeah, all the references, and again, the book itself, his art is lovely. It's nice. It's great.
I'm a big fan, but. This is something we talked about, is how he's... We found that book and we're like, oh man, why does everything have to look like Scott Pilgrim now? And it turned out it was actually Brian Lee O'Malley.
Yeah, the Young Avengers variant cover. He did a Young Avengers variant cover, and we thought, well, man, they're really stealing from him. Oh wait, it is him.
Yeah, he's fucking ripping himself off. It's terrible.
Now he's stealing his own work.
What a scumbag.
He's terrible. He keeps putting off the release of his next, the sequel.
Well, the sequel to Scott Pilgrim?
Yes. It was going to come out this year, but he pushed it off to next year.
I wonder if it, well, I'm just curious what that's about. You know, not what the story's about, but what the procrastination's about. I mean, I wonder if the pressure's on, or I don't know what he really.
I don't think there's any pressure necessarily. I know he's also. I mean, I'm sure he has some hand in the coloring process for their, you know, they're coloring all the Scott Pilgrim books one by one. I think one and two are out already, but he probably has some kind of oversight in that, and I don't know how much of the coloring he's handling, or if he's, you know, looking, you know, page by page, or just, you know. But I'm sure he has, and of course he drew and wrote the entire story of Scott Pilgrim until like the last six. He had some help with the backgrounds, but even if he's not doing the backgrounds, it's still a lot of work.
Well, I don't think he's really doing a whole lot on the color of the new ones, because he's got he's got like a giant mattress that's made of money.
Oh, is that why? So once you get money, you don't care about your art anymore.
That's probably a lie. He's probably not like a million bajillionaire. It's not like no, the movie wasn't a huge commercial success. And
no, it wasn't. It made its money back, but other than that, it wasn't. Yeah. I think it made much more of a hit back when it finally was released on DVD. I know that's where a lot of people saw it.
Yeah, sure.
When it finally got released.
But I feel like the comic and the movie probably brought even more attention to the comic, but it's probably made him, you know, a pretty reasonable income.
Yeah, I'm sure he's comfortable, at least.
I never really followed up on reading, because he has another book. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. But it came out even before Scott Pilgrim. Were you aware of it?
I'm not aware of it.
Yeah.
I'm Wikipedia. And
you could buy it in the Scott Pilgrim video game.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember if it did anything for you or not. There were kind of a lot of useless items.
I never played. I played the demo, I believe. I never actually played. I heard it was good. It was like a Double Dragon.
Yeah, it's thing. It was a very fun game. I played it a lot. Where was I going with that? No, I never followed up. I never read his original book,
Lost at Sea.
Yeah, that's the one.
He did. He also did Hopeless Savages, Ground Zero before them.
No, I was not aware of that one.
I don't know what. Let's see. Lost at Sea is a. They haven't printed here twice. I'm guessing Lost at Sea is a long form of the initial thing, but whatever.
But I remember right around the time Book 5 came out, I was like all about him. I was such a nerd over his art, and I was trying to keep up with every bit of media that he put out there.
Are you follow his Twitter?
That's where I was getting to. I thought his Twitter feed. I've been thinking for a while. It's like this has no content. It's just him saying shit you draws, you know, out of nowhere. It's just him him being an arrogant shithead. And calling people out that like say things to him on Twitter, and then one day when I started following him, the only kind of blog he had was his LiveJournal account,
yeah,
or some shit like that. I want to say it was LiveJournal. Well, he took it down without announcing that he was taking it down. At least I feel that's what's happened, and like a month or two after, like something happened with like the GUIDs or however in the hell like Google Reader like keeps track of that crap. Long story short, it started posting some Russian language blog, you know, and it was complete nonsense. And everyone's like, holy shit, you know, you've got Russian Viagra blog, and everyone's telling him this. And he's like, you guys are really stupid. What's wrong with you? You don't even know. I closed that a long time ago, so you guys are fucking dumb. And when he tweeted that, I was like, what is your fucking problem?
Okay, so I think we've wandered enough off topic about this discussion of actual
Yes. Graphics. Let's
Brian Lee O'Malley's Twitter account. May be an ass. Scott Pilgrim is a very, very good comic, and you should, if you haven't read it already, like I had not, you don't know what you're missing. It's very good. You should read it. It has some great character that is not character moments. Good, amazing, really good dialogue. Very clever stuff that you don't see in the movie, and is a lot more depth that I didn't expect to see. So,
it really just is truly, and the art is excellent.
Beautiful. His art is.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
He nails everything. It's really good.
I think that despite all the terrible stuff I can say about Brian Lee O'Malley being a huge wank, I feel that strongly about how good the comic is.
Yeah, it's very good. I read it in one sitting the first time I read it. So go buy the box set, go buy the colored editions, and if you haven't already. If anyone's listening to this, I agree, they probably already have read it. But it really has impacted comic book culture and nerd culture in a greater way. And reading it gives you a lot more even insight about that too. So. I think we're both thumbs way up on Scott Pilgrim.
No word.
I don't know if we should officially adopt the Ebert and Siskel method of the thumbs up, thumbs down.
I think we need to incorporate mustaches into it somehow.
So four mustaches system. One through four mustaches.
Well, there's only two of us. I don't know about you, but I can only grow one mustache.
I know, but. One out of two, that's only 50%. That's not a very good grade. That's an F.
Well, I mean...
It's still an entire mustache, though, so... I guess that's a good argument. I mean, one mustache is still very good.
Yes.
Especially when it's our mustaches, which are both amazing.
That is true.
And yours makes you look like Satan, so that's even better.
We know that.
And Satan... Oh, yes. You're going to hear this a lot, listeners. So yes. Let me tell you now. Satan is sexy.
Don't forget it,
and don't remember that. And yes. I'm gonna quiz you later about that. And Eric is Satan, so you know what that makes Eric.
Oh yeah.
Oh, there that he makes you that. So okay, we're done with the classic breakdown for the week. In the next segment, it would be where we would have Twitter/email questions from the viewers asking, you know, picking our minds about, you know, whatever they think.
Well, I don't know. I believe you did get one tweet
from you. But we didn't get any Twitter or email questions or comments aside from that. Maybe next week we'll get one or maybe an email. I'll bug all my friends to listen to this and spread it around. But I'm saying we'll do the same. But normally that's where we would have next. We don't got any. I did ask Kim for some input, and she said, can I ask you about Skyrim? Because she's probably playing that right now while we're recording this.
That's what happens when you're in grad school and you have to abandon everything. You're a year behind, than a year behind.
Yeah, she's just playing through Skyrim the first time right now.
Do you know when I first got Skyrim, I had just put my new PC together and installed a new video card, and it melted. That video card melted.
I find that funny.
The other thing that's pretty funny is the video cards that I'm buying overload my uninterrupted power supply. So I start playing like BioShock Infinite on my PC, and an alarm goes off.
Well, so it's, is it the same one that the Songbird, you know, comes out to?
No, it's not quite as melodic. No.
Oh, that's unfortunate. You should set it to that.
I'm gonna hack this power supply so it'll make that sound.
That'd be pretty awesome, actually.
You know, but instead of doing something productive like buy a power supply that can actually handle that amount of power.
I'd say do both.
Okay, that's right. That's the way to go.
Okay. and we're moving on. The last segment, I'll just say this because it's a little strange. Our name is Random. We decided to call it Random Character Generator. We may come up with a more clever name than that, but that's going to have to do for now.
I don't know, that's pretty clever.
Okay. if you say so. I don't think it's that clever. I think I could do better. But it basically, us
coming up with a new character on the spot, basically. One of us will give the other a prompt, and we'll work together to create a weird comic book character that I'll write it, and I'll try and get Eric to draw it, and he'll say he doesn't want to do that because it's stupid. And then
I love doing things that are stupid.
That's okay. He'll say it because he doesn't have time, which is probably true. But
it's very true.
Okay,
but it doesn't mean it's not enjoyable.
Okay.
So I didn't realize we apparently I wasn't listening when you told me about this. I actually the idea of drawing it.
Hilarious. You could. I'm not saying you have to. I just came up with the idea. Like, because I was like, when we did this, like, you know, months ago in the car, and you said, oh, we should do that again for the podcast.
Oh, good God. Do you remember that crap we came up with?
Yeah, it was...
Some kind...
A 16th century monk who is... printing press.
He builds a printing press out of his dead wife's bones.
Yeah. And I actually was like, I was going to write something, like write up an issue, a single issue, and have you draw it. And I was like, how long does it take to draw on a single issue? And you're like, probably years. And then...
Well, I did not say years, but...
You said a long time.
I did say that working 8 hours a day, it would probably take me about a week or 2 weeks.
I don't think either of us seriously considered making a comic, but... that is what the segment is, and so you got anything? You got any idea banging around your head? Something funny? If not, I'll just take the existing character, and we can try and strip away.
I think we've started out talking about Angela. We've already shit on Rob Liefeld. I think we need to come up with the ultimate '90s superhero.
Ultimate 90s superhero.
Yeah, when you introduced the bit, that popped into my head. I mean,
well,
we're talking...
The 90s was a good time for comic books.
It was the best time. I mean, this guy, he's probably like 9 feet tall, and he's got like guns coming out of his guns.
I have his name. Okay, I don't have anything else about him, but I have his name. His name is Pouch.
Pouch?
Pouch.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
It should
but
be.
But it's
it,
not.
It
the
sh-
P,
no. It's,
the
it's,
P is it's, spiky.
It Of course it's spiky. It's got to have an umlaut in there, too.
It's
but
fine. It's Pouch.
Here's Yes. But it can't just be Pouch. It's got to be Death Pouch.
No. Death. That's probably better. You're right.
Yeah,
death.
It's Death
Pouch.
Death
is that pouch. One word or hyphen or what? Are we looking at Spider-Man with a hyphen or just Death Pouch?
I mean, I don't know, man. You've got to, like, borrow characters from other alphabets really to convey Death Pouch to people. It's probably like Prince, where he's just going to become a symbol.
A symbol. Yeah. He'd just be an actual pouch, a drawing of a pouch.
Yeah. But good
But
Lord.
First, he can be Death Pouch.
Yes.
But yeah, he'd be, I think, 9 foot tall.
Yes, clearly.
He has to be a very large. He's not human.
No.
Maybe he was. We don't know yet. He's very mysterious as well. He's very mysterious.
He's mysterious in the way that we're making it up as we go.
Exactly. He can remember only bits and pieces of his life.
Mm-hmm.
He's from the future as well.
He's from the future, but spoilers, in the end it turns out he's from the past.
Exactly. And you think it's our future.
Yeah.
But he's from a different past.
They were all ghosts.
Is this the Sixth Sense?
Yeah.
He's from the Sixth Sense universe.
He's from the M. Night Shyamalan universe.
So, does he defeat the aliens from Signs? Does he carry around a lot of water?
I hope he does all of
or
these things.
Is he the one who unleashes the virus that makes all the makes people kill themselves?
I would hope so.
In The Happening, the worst. Is he part of the plant culture?
He's one of the snarfs or whatever, and the shit was in
the snarfs.
Lady in the Water. Oh my God.
Oh.
Anyway.
That's one I haven't seen.
We need to
ran out of M. Night Shyamalan after.
It's okay.
I only saw The Happening because I thought I wanted to see how bad it was.
He ruined Avatar.
That yeah, that, I did not see that because that would have depressed me probably. But
oh my God. So anyway, yes.
Yeah, 9 foot tall, Death from Pouch, the future and the past at the same time.
Well, that's the twist, you know,
at the very end of his little first character introducing character arc. Mm-hmm. What universe is he in? Is he a Marvel guy? Is he Image? He must be an Image guy, right?
He's got to be. He's in the Spawn universe.
The Spawn universe.
This is how retarded he is.
The Spawn universe still's out there, so
they're still putting out Spawn books. I know, and I weep for that.
Someone's buying them.
It's some kind of Ponzi scheme, I think that.
Is that Spawn's a Ponzi scheme?
Spawn has got to be a Ponzi scheme. I mean, how else is...
You pay into the Spawn, and then you 3 months later, you're supposed to get your Spawn money doubled?
It's something like that, I'm sure. That's how Todd McFarlane is making his living, through the Spawn Ponzi scheme. It's the Spawnzy scheme.
Oh, my God. Spawnzy.
Were we both going for it?
That was. Now this makes me think of Fonzie, but, like, he died and sold his soul to the devil to come back and be an avenging greaser. I think that's a better... We're going full on with Sponzies. Fuck Death Pouch. I am loving Sponzie.
I think that's his sidekick. That's good.
Sponzy. It's a greaser. A greaser who was a really cool guy.
He's got to have a Ghost Rider head.
Yeah, he had like a James Dean.
Yeah.
Accident, you know, like a really tragic car accident, and you know, but there was some foul play. Someone cut his brake lines or something, and so he sold his soul to the devil to come back. But by the time he came back, everyone he knew had moved on, and he was scarred and ugly, and he had a Ghost Rider head.
So he decided to light his head on fire.
Yeah, he looks like Ghost Rider, but with like a you know, the Fonzie haircut.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and with greased. He has like greased flame head.
Yes.
That's
how it burns.
I was like, yeah, it's actually, he applies it and makes it, he styles it.
Yeah.
And he bangs on you know, the music. Why can't I think of the name?
It's okay.
The music machine. That's an awful... The music machine. I am an idiot.
What in the hell are you talking about?
In Happy Days, Fonzie would... It would stop...
Jukebox?
Yes. A jukebox. Or I like to call it a music machine.
A music machine.
Okay, so we got Sponzy and a Death Pouch.
Sponzy, it's just two for one. This is quality shit.
Death Pouch. Well, Sponzy, obviously, we got his look down. Death Pouch, 9 foot tall.
Yeah, he
has no feet. He has hooves.
He doesn't have... Yeah, hooves, exactly. That's good. Feet are hard to draw.
Feet are hard to draw.
So are hands. He doesn't have hands. He's got guns.
He's got guns for hands.
He's got guns for hands.
Hands are... He has... It's like... He's a killing machine, so he's...
Yes.
And he's got...
Much like Rob Halford. Just like Rob Halford. He's
except
a killing machine.
You subtract all quality characteristics from him.
Yes.
And make him... And he becomes Death Pouch.
I think Rob Halford would love Death Pouch.
I don't think Rob Halford would like Death Pouch.
Have you seen any of the covers to any Judas Priest albums? I've seen them all.
I've seen all of them. They all look exactly like Death Pouch
looks in my mind.
Okay, well, Death Pouch to me, and I don't think he has, like, I think he wears a pouch. Like, he like his clothing is a pouch.
Yes.
A giant pouch. Like, yes. it's some kind of straw, but it just flaps down and up, and you can store things, and it has buttons, many buttons. They're all brass.
I just see it. It's like a man.
And they're all bullets.
It's like a man burka made out of pouches.
Yeah, exactly. And all the buttons are actually bullets.
Yes.
They're bullet buttons.
Of course.
And
when he shoots at you, it doesn't actually shoot the bullet, but it shoots the whole cartridge.
Exactly.
Because it's drawn by someone who doesn't know how fucking guns work.
Hey, guns are complicated. It's like a slingshot that throws
a whole cartridge at you.
That's how it works, right? Yeah.
That's
how guns work.
That is how guns work. I got on the phone this afternoon. I called science.
You called and, science. Well, and, I didn't have the number for science. It's a good thing you had it.
I looked it up on the internet. I looked up the number for science, and I called them, and they're like, "Yeah, that's how guns work. We okay. know we're science."
Okay. okay, so we got the character.
Richard Dawkins answered the phone.
I'm not going to even touch that.
That's okay.
So we've got Death, Pouch, and Spawnsy. So who's the enemy? Who's the villain?
Oh, my goodness. Who could stand up against that terrible threat? Where's the conflict coming from? It's probably satanic in nature. We're talking about Spawnsy.
If it's an image,
or maybe we flip that on its head and
it's God. I think they fight God.
They should fight God.
But it's past God.
It's past God.
It's Old Testament God.
Okay. Yeah. That ties it all back in together. It's where Death Pouch is from the past.
Exactly.
That's where their history comes from. It comes from history.
His story. There's a reason we call it history, because it's his, capital His story.
Yes. 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 It is. This is getting deep.
So we got Death Pouch and Spawnsy, and they fight God.
They do.
That's good. Okay. So, that was Random Character Generator, everybody.
We're all very ashamed of ourselves.
Yeah, that was... I feel a little bit soiled. But we'll go take a shower, and we'll do it again next week. It'll be much better. So I think that's the end of our little adventure. I think we've already gone well over our time allotment.
Extremely well over, yes.
But we'll work on it next week. Maybe we'll take your suggestions if we get any. If anybody listens this entire thing,
all the suggestions will be shut the fuck up.
Why you keep talking? I don't care how you pronounce GIF or JIF. You're both wrong. Yeah. You're talking.
You're just wrong because you're not me.
Exactly. But, again, well, we welcome any suggestions. If you'd like, if it's a little too long, if it links okay, too many books reviewed, not enough, like what segments you like, if we talk too much about any specific thing, or too little. Give us what you think. We just want thoughts. And we can kind of see what happens, I guess. Lastly, but not leastly, we'll plug ourselves, give us where you can find us on the interwebs. You can go first, Eric.
Yeah, I am Eric Z. Goodnight. You can just Google me and find a lot of stuff, like my illustration portfolio on Twitter. I'm Mr. Bad Example. That's MR Bad Example. I also do, Tumblr. I have a Facebook page, various other things.
You can find me on my Twitter. I'm Mixmaster Cereal. It's MixmasterCereal, just like it sounds. On Tumblr, I'm hourofthewolf.tumblr.com. I also run a wrestling Tumblr that is hittingthemark.tumblr.com. You can tweet either of us questions, comments about the show. You can also email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Anything you want to say to either of us. That is Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Please listen and comment. We love the comments. And we'll be seeing you soon. Bye.
Goodbye.